Hello, my name is Alexandra Frank. I just turned 32. Today is August 13th, 2018. We're in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm speaking with my sister, Stephanie.
My name is Stephanie Frank. I'm 35. And today is August 13th, 2018. We're in Kansas City, and I'm speaking with my sister, Alexandra.
Okay, so I've known you for 32 years, but can you tell us about yourself?
How would you
talk about yourself if somebody didn't know who you were? I'll give you some wait time or some think time. That's what we call it on the teachers.
I don't know what to say.
You don't like labels.
I guess in some ways that's true. Like, I don't think, oh, this is how I introduce myself. I introduce myself in context to people. So I think that's part of it. I'm the one who lives in Kansas City. Okay. So Alexandra is visiting me from Baltimore. Mm-hmm. We're both originally from Maryland. I was born in Washington, D.C., but I just spent the first couple of days there, in the hospital. Yeah. And we grew up in suburban Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So I
remember.
So I think in some ways that I think of myself as an East Coaster.
Okay.
Yeah. I lived for 8 years in Los Angeles, where I went to school. I got my PhD at the University of Southern California. Mm-hmm. And then that is what brought me to Kansas City for a job.
Okay.
As a professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Which is not too far from where we're sitting.
That's right. It's just south of here. So I think that, especially in Kansas City, I feel a bit like, oh, I stick out as not from here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What makes you think that you stick out?
Oh, there's just certain personality traits. I'm a confident woman who speaks in public, and sometimes people stare at that. Even if I'm not saying anything controversial. So I think it's sometimes just...
Do you think it has anything to do with your tone or what you're saying? Maybe the content?
I think
provocative.
I'm not being provocative. I just think it's the way that I carry myself, and the way that I speak, and maybe the tone in terms of being confident about it.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I definitely agree that you're confident, but I also feel like there's like a passion there too. You know.
Depends. Depends on my
mood. You speak forcefully about certain things. You know.
So do you.
Yeah, but that's not a part of me that I share with everybody.
Okay.
Whereas I think you're less guarded.
That's
about
true.
It.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
You know, like I have to really know you if I'm gonna show you that this is how I think and feel. Because when I'm in a situation, I'm making it all about me. But when I'm in a situation, where ordinarily it might be easy for me to share my opinion or my point of view. You know, if I don't know the person very well, I'm just going to kind of hold back and listen to theirs because I'm a more comfortable listener in, new situations. And, that's something that I think makes people think I'm standoffish or antisocial, which I don't think is fair. I think that's something that, people misunderstand about me, which leads me to my next question.
Did I successfully answer that enough? I don't know.
It's hard to tell because I know you so well. Like you didn't tell me anything I didn't already know.
Yeah.
But I have this question for you. What do you think people misunderstand the most about you?
I think probably that I'm highly critical. I have an analytical brain. I've always been like that, and I've been trained to be a cultural critic. I have degrees in American studies. And that trained me to really be able to express what I was thinking. And it's easier for me to talk about what I don't like than what I do like in those terms. So I think that people, when they hear me complain about something, they're like, oh, negative Nancy.
Oh, I see. So you think that people misunderstand that you're talking about something from a critical perspective, which isn't necessarily a negative thing.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it is. I'm not,
I feel the same way because people like our father and our brother, they'll say that we're judgmental. And it's like, no, this is not judgment. It's me just analyzing a situation, recognizing an injustice or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm drawing attention to something that I think people ought to not, you know, ignore anymore. It could be something really small, but it could also be something really, really big. And yeah.
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 So how would you answer that question? What do you think people most misunderstand about you?
You know, I don't like this word, but for a long time, I feel like people have thought of me as a bitch. Mm. I even have resting bitch face, as you know. And
you just look Germanic.
And I think that to an extent, we're all, you know, narcissistic jerks. I could use another term, but, you know, I won't. And I don't think I'm any more of a bitch than the average person, I suppose. So I think then again, this is just a projection. I have no idea what people really think of me unless they've told me to my face, you know. So I guess that whole being standoffish or shy or critical, you know, people might think of me as not fun to be around. But I think...
But I know that's not the case.
Okay. There's one person out there. Great.
I think there's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, well, I was just being, you know...
But we don't want to give anybody listening to this the wrong impression.
Thank you. This is what I need you for. Someone to remind me not to, you know, be too self-deprecating. So you had mentioned earlier that you went to USC and you have these degrees in American Studies. Is your PhD in American Studies?
No. I have a bachelor's and a master's in American Studies from the University of Maryland. And I went to USC to get a PhD in urban planning.
Okay.
And it's technically a degree in policy planning and development. It's an experiment to combine programs, but it's recognized as urban planning.
Okay. So how did you find that? How did you know that was something that you wanted to do?
Well, when I was studying American Studies as an undergrad, when I first got to college, I thought, I'm going to go to law school because I can use that analytical, argumentative.
Oh, yeah.
All of these things that I, you know, thought about myself, which are true, and use it for law. For that would be really, you know, I have a highly logical brain, all of these things. Mm-hmm. But then I discovered, no, I you know, when you get to college, you learn about all these things that you didn't know existed
mm-hmm.
before. And
like beer pong. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. That's not really characteristic of either of us. So
no, that's why it was funny.
Yeah. So I learned about material culture, the idea that you could analyze things like material mm-hmm. objects mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that this is not you it's not objective, you know, somebody made it so that you can learn something about it, and you learn about society through looking at the things we make
mm-hmm.
and this led me to combine. I already was interested in buildings and history and things like that, so I thought in architecture and mm-hmm. so
design,
yeah, not that I could be the designer or be the architect, but that I could appreciate it.
Right. So that's the critical part.
Right. Exactly. And so I learned, oh, you could just make a career out of analyzing these things. Wow. So that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to do. And I was really interested in particularly in the built environment. So buildings and how the relationship between people and buildings,
mm-hmm.
right? How
mm-hmm.
they shape one another,
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. people shape place and place shapes people.
Mm-hmm.
So I then in American Studies is very disembodied.
Mm.
It's very much about identities, and it's not necessarily very material. Well, that's not to say that people don't do it. It's mm-hmm. just in places where you can go to study it. I was not having a lot of success finding that. And I originally thought I wanted to be an architectural historian, but it's hard to get into architectural history without, if you don't already have an art history type, very
background.
Deep, you know, a narrower but deep background in architectural history
mm-hmm.
or an actual degree in architecture. So I ended up going to USC because they had money.
they were going to fund my study
and that I would be a planning historian. And it, actually, it was made all, it was, that was a good decision. I think that was the right thing to do.
Okay. But so that answers the question of, you know, what you wanted to study and why. But it's not as if you're just, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that your day-to-day, like day job, is really teaching people about this stuff. So how did you know you wanted to teach people about it?
I don't know. I think always, I've always, I love being a student. Like I love, you know, I love school. I like learning. I like, I love knowledge. I love sharing knowledge. I love acquiring it, creating it, you know, like digging through an archive, making sense of this, sharing that, reading something, being able to share that with other people. So that's just this love of knowledge. So I thought, oh, hey, I could teach other people about this. I mean, that's what part of, if you want to be a researcher working at a university, you, you have to teach. So I don't know that it so much was like, oh, I really want to be a teacher, as it was, I really wanted to do the research about this. And so what came with that was teaching. Mm-hmm. And at first, I when I first started teaching, I didn't particularly like it. Like it was, it was so much harder than I thought it was going to be. But I do now.
It's a does it flip flop? Do you prefer teaching as opposed to doing your own
research?
No,
I love doing the research. I hate writing it up. It's the writing that I don't like to do. I think a lot of people find that to be the hardest too. I don't think I'm alone in that.
I follow something on Twitter. that shows that you know, posts memes and stuff like that. So I understand that a lot of academics have a hard time writing. There's a lot of procrastination. So you weren't expecting to like teaching, it sounds like.
No, I was expecting to like it. And then I didn't like it. And so that was what I was like, oh my God, about doing the right thing. It was just, it was very, it was hard. It didn't come as naturally to me as I thought it would. You know, some of the just things I didn't expect. Something that you don't, when you're a nerd and you're so good at school, you don't sit and think, well, what's it like to be a student who doesn't, who isn't as enthusiastic, doesn't
about
like to do it,
and, stuff,
and doesn't, and, but also just
learning.
That they're, that's not where they want to be. They have other priorities. They have other interests, whatever. And so, it's getting through to those people. Like you, you can, the people who are like excited about it, those are, they're easier to teach because they will, they'll, they're engaged with it. It's the people that you need, you need to reach.
That. But there's something that you just said that reminded me of this adage that I learned when I was becoming a teacher, which is teachers are not born. Like no one is a natural born teacher. Teachers are made. You know, you have to work at it. And you know that. I know that. And so I dream about how maybe in 10 years I'll be a really great teacher. But right now, I'm okay. I'm surviving. My kids are learning to read.
Why don't you tell us about what you do? What do you teach? So if I'm teaching, I teach primarily undergraduates. But you're teaching.
I'm teaching people born in this decade. I'm an elementary school teacher. So this past year I was teaching first grade, and my kids ranged anywhere from age 5, which means they really should have been in kindergarten, to I think my oldest student was 8 or 9. And in a couple of weeks, in the fall, I'll be starting my second year of teaching on my own, and I'll be teaching second grade. And in fact, I'll have probably at least 15 students that I, you know, just finished teaching in my class. And I don't know. What else do you want to know?
Well, I mean, so how did you, how did you find your career path? Let's start, or, you know, like go, let's do that. You, it's sort of similar to what you asked me. And I think rather than ask these other things, we can go back to them about more specifically about teaching.
Well, like you, I think I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. I always loved school, and I spent a lot of time watching my teachers, understanding like how they were talking to us. And sometimes, you know, they were just talking to the back of the room, if you know what I mean, like just to certain students. And I kind of always felt like I was in on something when that would happen, you know. And so that made me think, oh, there's something going on here with teaching. Teaching is really cool because teaching can make you feel special, seen. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought I was going to be a teacher. I never thought I was going to be an elementary school teacher. In high school, I really enjoyed reading and writing. And I had a lot of teachers who, you know, I guess fostered that in me. And I was thinking, oh, I should, you know, I wanted to teach college level English, like English literature. And then there was somebody who lived across the hall, meaning you, who was like, well, you know, English PhDs are a dime a dozen. So, you know, maybe go into something else. And so I think like you, I went to college. I discovered that there are all these different things, and I found what I was interested in, and I kind of lost sight of being a professor of English. After that, I actually wanted to be a professor of film studies, and I actually got my master's degree in that, and fully intending to go on to get a PhD. It's an idea that's in the back of my head all the time, saying, Alexandra, you really should go get that PhD. But I don't know when that's going to happen. And then what happened? So I got my master's degree in 2011. I moved home. There's not really much you can do with that if you're not going to continue going on to school, you know. I couldn't put myself out there. We talked about this already. I'm shy. and so I ended up living with Dad. And I was just kind of struggling to find any kind of work. And then I ended up working at a child care center before and after school. And that's when I realized, oh, I really like working with kids. They're funny. They say some really interesting things. They ask these good questions. They will listen to me. Tell them stories about stuff. And then I was like, well, maybe I should, you know, try this out. So I applied for a program that's like Teach for America called Urban Teachers. Unfortunately, that's how we always have to describe it because it's not as well known as Teach for America. But it's an alternative teacher preparation program. And they are based in Baltimore, but they have cohorts or, you know, programs in Baltimore, in Washington, D.C., and in Dallas-Fort Worth. I wanted to go to Baltimore, which is not too far from home. And that's what happened. So it's been about 2 years that I started, a little over 2 years that I started training to become a teacher. And then my first year of the program, I was a resident teacher, which means I was student teaching. I was not the teacher of record, but I was also doing a lot of teaching. And it turns out that I was teaching with an experienced teacher, and it was her first time having to teach two grades in the same classroom. So half of the students were in first grade and half the students were in second grade. And by the end of the year, I was responsible for the students, for the learning of the students in first grade. When she told me at the beginning of the year that that's how she saw this happening, she was like, we're going to have like two classrooms running in the same room. And it scared the crap out of me, you know? But I kind of felt like she tricked me into it because by the end of the year, that's what was really happening. And then...
She didn't trick you. She told you what she wanted.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't think it would happen. You know? I just... She didn't trick me. You're right. but it surprised me. And so I was lucky enough to be hired at the school where I was a student teacher and where I am still a teacher. So.
Okay. So describe what your first day of teaching was like. Do you remember? I mean, I probably couldn't remember mine. So that was 5 years ago.
God. A first year solo teaching?
If you want, that's fine.
I just remember all of these like 30 little faces looking at me, hanging on my every word, and me feeling like I have no idea what I am doing, you know? I really don't remember much from that day. I remember that Lewis, our brother, was in town, and he needed to drop off keys to my apartment. And so he came while they were taking Spanish, because it was a Tuesday. And so I was free. And he dropped off the keys. And several times throughout the rest of the year, the kids were like, we want to meet your brother. We want to meet your brother. And I said, well, he was here on the very first day of class, but you were in Spanish. So, because he lives in Brooklyn, New York. And it's not likely that he'll ever be able to visit while I'm, you know, teaching and to help out in the classroom. But you've helped out in the classroom.
Yeah. A
couple of times. So I'm known as Ms. Frank, obviously. And I talk about you because you're, you know, important to me. And so they already knew who you were before you came. And I called you Dr. Frank because we can't both be Ms. Frank.
It would be too confusing for them.
Yeah. You know, I hope you don't mind, but I don't actually want to talk about teaching.
Okay, you don't?
No. I mean,
at all? All right.
I mean, it's not like I don't love my job. It's the best one I've ever had. It challenges me every day, you know, to be better because there's a lot riding on it. You know what I mean? I just feel like there's so many more interesting things to talk about.
All right,
I mean, I feel bad for our facilitator here who's listening to this boring conversation about our teaching.
All right. So what do you want to talk
about? I mean, when you were talking, it was good. But, you know, I'm just listening to myself. I'm thinking, no. Mm. What do you want to be remembered for?
I don't know. I guess... We talked a little bit about this before, about how I don't know how to answer this.
Well, I put you on the spot.
You did. You did.
I don't want to lead you, but I still feel like...
I think my humor, my intelligence, my wit, my empathy, my compassion, how I share my interest and knowledge and how I want to share it with people and hopefully my students.
Okay.
Value that, and that's what they get out of it.
I was thinking you would say something about your research.
Yeah.
You're not in love with it anymore?
The talk about thinking something that's not that interesting when you've been working on it for a while, you're like, oh my God, do I have to keep doing this? Because you just sort of get frustrated.
You want to move on to something
else?
Yeah,
I'm just sort of frustrated with certain things.
Mm.
You know, that's just what happens.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you any questions about that because I don't want to put anyone to sleep.
Oh, jeez.
No, you can tease me back, you know.
Oh,
I don't want to be known as the mean sister.
But you are. No, I don't think you are. I think you probably think I am. I'm the older one. Because, you know, we weren't always such great friends.
No.
Yeah.
No, we were not.
But maybe before we get into that, I should ask you, what do you want to be remembered for?
I do want to be remembered as someone who can make people laugh. You've heard me say this before, that if I can't make somebody laugh, I feel like, maybe this relationship is not going to, you know, be very good. I want to be remembered as someone who cared.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who stood up, called out injustices. Somebody who... helped raise empathetic children, especially
people,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially in the age of Trump, you know, I feel like one way to sum up my job is really to make sure that we don't have any more Trumps, you know, and everything that he represents, you know. I don't want to help raise racists or xenophobes or homophobes or misogynists, you know, that kind of thing. Islamophobes. I could go on.
Yeah, a lot of phobes.
Yeah. White supremacists, anti-Semites, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. I take that part of my job very seriously. You know, I want to make sure that I'm remembered as somebody who was welcoming of differences, not somebody who was afraid. Because I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that I help raise people who are open-minded and caring, I guess. So I do think we should talk about how we became friends.
Okay.
Do you want to tell the story?
No, I think you're probably better at it. I don't know. You talk about it more.
Mm. Okay. Well, I remember us growing up and sharing a room. We're 3.5 years apart, by the way. And so we were sharing a room, and you were reaching that age of like 10 where you were like, get out of here. I want to spend time in the room with my friends, you know, like after school, on the weekends, whatever. And so I just kind of felt like, you know, but I was really close to our brother Louis because, you know, we're 2 years apart, but at a certain point, we also look like we could have been twins, even with like similar haircuts and everything. Yeah. And, you know, the mushroom cut was very big in the early 90s. And so, but we were always interested in movies, and maybe that's something we can talk about in general. But, and we really, really, really wanted to see Little Women by Gillian Armstrong, the director.
Yeah.
And that came out Christmas Day, 1994. And we did not get to go.
And I don't know why that
was. I don't know. That's the mystery of it all.
Yeah.
But I remember we rented it on video. And we, I don't know what our fight was about. Like, we both wanted to see this thing, right? But we did not watch it together. For some reason, you watched it by yourself first. And by this time, I was already in another room. Yeah. I had my own room now. And I just remember at night, finishing it up, you know, watching Professor Bear and Joe March, you know, hold hands under the umbrella, the sweeping music, and I'm bawling. And then you came in the room and you were like, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, it's so good, you know? And I say that, you know, we were supposed to watch it together, right? But we didn't for whatever reason. But ever since then, we have been best friends.
Yeah.
Which means we've been friends for over 20 years.
Yeah, it's like 23 years.
23 years, yeah. And out of Little Women, we became really, really big fans of Christian Bale, even card-carrying members of his fan club. And as part of the fan club, we also received like autographed pictures of him. And I always, you know, I'm wondering if that really is his autograph or he, you know, just an assistant. But ironically, but not so ironically, I have that picture in my living room.
Framed.
Framed, yeah. So whenever I'm watching TV, there's young Christian Bale looking at me saying, best wishes, Alexandra.
Did you give me mine? Because so... so... This, we should also point out that our mom was big on taking us to movies, and she indulged us in taking us to see Christian Bale movies and all of that. Even stuff that was maybe not even age appropriate, like American Psycho. In what year was that? 2000.
2000. We saw it twice in the theater. It was also the last movie she saw in the theater before she died.
Yeah, she died when I was 17.
And I was 13 going on 14.
Yeah. And so our dad, you know, raised us, I guess, or he was, you know, he's a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold the house last year. And I went back over Labor Day in order to clean, you know, I hadn't lived there in 12 years, but I still had a lot of stuff. So to clean out, what did I want before it was going to get tossed? And so I left a lot of stuff.
So did I.
A lot of stuff. I
don't regret
stuff,
it either.
Me either. It was stuff I hadn't looked at in a long time.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff. And then, I left my Christian Bale portrait signed thing.
Did you?
But then you went and got it for me.
Did I?
You said you did. And that's why I'm wondering if you gave it to me. I don't know that you did. So you don't think
but
you
I
did?
But I don't have it.
You don't have it?
I don't have it. If I had it, I'd know where it is.
Well, you told me that you got
like
it.
A conversation I think we could have maybe offline.
I know. It's just sort of fun.
I don't know what to waste time about.
Brought that up. I mean, look, I'm not going to die if I don't have it, but
I'm sure it looks exactly the same as mine. It just says Stephanie instead of Alexandra.
So, yeah. Okay, well.
Yeah, so we were card-carrying members.
Yeah.
What do you love about that movie?
I think there's a lot.
That's a big question.
Yeah, it is. It's about sisters. There's also tension, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you the Amy or am I the?
No, I'm Joe. I don't know who.
I'm Joe.
Yeah, we're both Joe. It's fine.
I'm Joe and I'm Beth.
Yeah, I could see that, but I think I'm Joe.
I think you're also Meg.
Well, because I'm the oldest?
No.
You think I'm vain?
No. Because you take care of people.
You think that's what she's doing?
Yes. Okay. She had to step in when Marmy was gone.
Yeah.
She's more nurturing than any of the others.
Okay.
God, that makes me seem like I'm not nurturing.
No, but it's not true. It just.
Okay. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think particularly, after seeing that movie, I read the book, saw all the other movie adaptations. It's by far the best.
The one with Winona
Ryder. Mm-hmm. She was robbed of an Oscar.
Yeah, absolutely. Jessica Lange.
Anyway, Sky. So she. I think the way that it was presented, certainly different than the earlier ones, it's incredibly feminist.
Mm-hmm.
There are just so many scenes and the way that things are emphasized that you go for the feminism. And I think that that movie helped make me an ardent feminist. I mean, at a young age, when you people aren't talking about, don't tell, what was I, 12, 12-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Certain things that it just doesn't, it's not like people were saying, no, you can't. I never got the sense that someone said, no, you can't do that because you're
right.
a girl.
But you must have realized there was a broader struggle for gender equity when you see them pointing it out. I think that one of the best scenes in the film is when, Meg comes back from the engagement party or whatever. And she's like, why is it that Lori can go and, drink champagne and no one's going to think ill of him. But when a woman enjoys herself in public, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
How dare she? And then Marmy's like, because Lori's a man. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I guess there's also the idea of that Joe being the creative, brooding type, which is kind of, she's a tomboy.
Yeah.
And for her to try to make her way in a man's world,
right?
In a man's profession, and also having to conceal her identity because of the stories that she wants to tell. But then there's Professor Bear who tells her, "No, you really should be writing about something you know," which is that goes against something that she says earlier in the film, which also just kind of shows how her character grows. She's a young person then who's like, "You shouldn't write what you know." Because she's thinking of fantasy.
She just wants to make it up, yeah.
Yeah. Because she's really unhappy where she is. She doesn't like, her circumstances. She wants to live in a fairy tale or whatever, gothic romance. And by the end of it, she realizes actually writing what I know is more important. It's a great movie. I've never read the book.
Oh.
That is my confession for the day.
I did rescue my copy of the book from the house. That is something, and I have it. That I have.
I started reading it recently. When I say recently, within a couple of years, you know, I started reading the book and then I was like, ooh, this is, I don't know. I should probably try again. But for whatever reason, I didn't, wasn't that engaged. Yeah. But I agree that it made me, if I had to trace back my feminism, it begins.
Yeah, I mean, that's the earliest I can remember.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that I wonder about all the time. You know, we mentioned that our mom died 18 years ago. And when she died, I was young. You were young. And she was only just my mom.
Yeah.
I didn't really get to know her as a woman. So one of the things I know I would ask her if I could is, you know, are you a feminist? Because I have no idea if mom identified as such. I want to believe that she did, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So speaking of mom, other than your looks, because you look more like mom, I look like dad's mom. What else do you think you inherited from her?
I think her compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Wanting to help people do things. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what she did. She was sick, but she
was selfless.
Yeah. I don't think I'm selfless.
No. I don't think it's actually good to be selfless. Right? You have to take care of yourself. Like they say on the airplane. Put the oxygen mask over yourself before assisting others. You know?
Yeah.
What did you inherit from dad?
His pale skin. I don't know. I think maybe it's his humor. I don't know.
He's really goofy.
He's goofy. He can be goofy. I mean, I can be goofy.
But he also told me recently he doesn't think I'm funny.
Oh.
Because I'm not Jerry Lewis. Sorry.
You make him laugh. I don't know what he was thinking.
I think for him, funny means like you tell jokes. I don't tell jokes, but I'm like funny in it situationally, observationally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think we also, we both got from him a love of movies. Not that, I mean, I think mom did too, but I think maybe it's just because we had more time with him. I think that he's someone who.
But I remember more about mom's spectatorship. Like, the experience of like watching her watch movies than I do dad. There's nothing
well, just
really
he asks
interesting.
A lot of questions like, well, what's this?
Yeah, I guess he's getting older. But but mom, you know, like at the end of an action movie where the villain actually finally dies, falls off the you know the cliff or whatever, she's like, she would always say bye bye. You know, there are just things that I remember more about her relationship to movies. Or maybe it's just because those are the memories that I want to keep.
Maybe.
You know,
and she's the one who would take us to the movies
mm-hmm.
more often. I mean, mm-hmm. when we were little, dad tells us stories about, oh, I took you to, I don't know, something. And
Care Bears movies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, but we were fighting or there was crying or there was something.
No, I was upset and some guy was, you know, mean to dad because he wouldn't get me to shut up, you know. And I think dad was probably thinking, this is not a regular thing for me, man. I don't usually go to the movies with my kids.
Or just it's like,
leave
it's a
alone.
Kid's movie. Just, you know, what do you expect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but. That's something I anticipate ever changing. I will always love movies.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, why do we love movies so much? We're more movie watchers than we are readers.
Yeah.
Although I still consider myself a reader.
Yeah, you certainly read more fiction. I don't read fiction.
Especially when they're children's books. Yeah.
You read me children's books.
That's right.
Storytelling.
Oh.
I think it's the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I love stories.
I get emotional. I get wrapped up in it. It's a way to escape.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's so unoriginal. No, sorry, but you know, when like movies are escapists, if anything, I watch movies because I want to feel something.
That's true. I do want to feel something. I want to learn something.
Mm-hmm. I want to be confronted. I don't want things to be easy. Like, oh, this is just giving you what you want. You know, I want something to challenge me,
That's true.
To make me feel uncomfortable, because those are the movies that I'll remember, the ones that I'll enjoy, because that's the experience. Then again, you know, the Little Women that we love is not giving us something confrontational. Although,
no. But I think in its day,
mm-hmm. you know, but I have changed over the years. I used to be really upset that she didn't marry Laurie, and now I'm like, Professor Bear.
Yeah, when you're a kid, you don't get it. As an adult, you get it.
Yeah, but I still think I'm in the minority.
I don't know about that. I don't really.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll just have to research it.
Yeah,
as the cultural critics that we are.
That's right.
And find the answer to that question. But we'll always be remembered as the women who love Little Women. Thank you for speaking with me, Stephanie.
Thank you, Alexandra.